Matthew Columbus Williams versus Commonwealth. Mr. Jones and Ms. Campbell. Mr. Jones, you've already signed in?
Yes, ma'am, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Colston Jones from the Office of the Public Defender.
Counsel, one second. You want a time for rebuttal?
Yes, please. Thank you. May I reserve 5 minutes, please, Your Honor?
Okay.
I represent the appellant in this matter, Mr. Matthew Williams. And the assignment of error that has been granted and that we're here about today is about the admission of a prior conviction order that was introduced as an element of the Commonwealth's case in support of two of the charges as far as a prior conviction for driving under the influence of alcohol that came from the circuit court for the city of Norfolk. And at trial, the attorney who represented Mr. Williams at trial objected to the admission of the document on the basis that it was not a properly certified copy. The stamp on the prior certified copy, which is found at page 73 of the joint appendix, bore a digital signature from a deputy clerk in the Norfolk Circuit Court, but it referred to a code section that that I read, and as mentioned in the brief, to really be sort of a permissive statute that has been enacted to allow the clerk's offices to provide citizens copies of court documents in digital form rather than simply a paper form. Just I read that to be authorizing that, and that is so. The objection at trial was that this was not a properly certified copy pursuant to 801-389, and that the document ought not to have been admitted into evidence.
So, counsel, let me understand. You're stating that 17.2258.3.2 does not comply with 801-389, that it would not, even in this digital age?
Well, how I read the 17.1 statute is that it is, for example, if a person wanted to come to court and purchase a certified copy of a divorce decree or a deed or something like that, that sort of since we've had clerk's offices, the way that that's done is with a paper or a hard copy. But now that we do have the digital age, that the circuit courts are authorized to accept payment for the certified copies, but that they're permitted to issue those digitally however they see fit. But I think that sort of the for purposes of admitting those kinds of documents into evidence at trial, that 801-389 controls, and that talks about the appropriate manner of certifying these documents as a true copy or a copy teste.
Okay, even let's assume that you're correct. Even if you are correct, how do you get around the fact that there was a DMV abstract admitted without objection?
Well, that's really addressed specifically in the brief and also in the demand for a three-judge panel. And I think that if you refer to Joint Appendix 38, where that DMV abstract is offered, the prosecutor makes quite clear that he's offering the DMV abstract only for the limited purpose of demonstrating that Mr. Williams' license had been revoked, which, of course, was an element of one of the felony charges, driving while intoxicated, with a license that's been revoked in relation to a DUI conviction. So certainly pieces of evidence are admitted for limited purposes all the time, so it seems to me that it would be unfair to deem that the objection to the prior conviction order has been waived by a failure to object to the transcript, which was only offered for the purpose of showing the revocation of the license.
Refresh my memory. Does the trial judge ever indicate that it's only be admitted for those purposes? I didn't recall it, but I'm sure you're more familiar with it than I could be.
I don't think that she specifically says that she receives it into evidence, but as I say, the prosecutor doesn't say the magic words limited purpose. I'll be perfectly frank and concede that, but if I may...
I don't want you to spend too much time on that.
He just does say that the reason for the abstract is to show the fact that the license has been revoked.
Well, the proffer by the exhibit by the prosecutor, it said, I offer the DMV transcript as well as certified copies of two prior DUIs in support of the charge of this being the third. The reason for the abstract is to show the fact that the license has been revoked. So it looks like he offered the abstract for both purposes.
My best response to that, Your Honor, would be that if my recollection serves me correctly, that those are all marked, they're introduced collectively as a single exhibit, and that he's being specific about the purpose of the abstract being to demonstrate the suspension, or excuse me, the revocation of the license. And I was not a trial counsel. I'm not certain why he chose to introduce them.
But there was no objection to the admission of DMV transcript for any purpose. I mean, there's no, of course, no objection to the DMV abstract. Well, if there's no objection to it, it shows what it shows.
And again, my best response to that, Your Honor, is that he did not say limited purpose, but he did say it's to show the revocation. And I, immediately following that is the trial counsel, the Mr. Williams trial counsel's statement that there's no objection to that, but it, that follows immediately on the heels of saying that the purpose of the admitting the abstract is to demonstrate the revocation. And especially after there's been this sort of lengthy discussion about whether the prior order, prior conviction order, is properly certified, it seems to me that it would really be unfair to sort of deem that objection to have been waived by acquiescing to the admission of an additional document that's specifically offered for a given purpose that's not related to the purpose of the prior conviction order. I think I'd be happy to reserve any additional time for rebuttal unless there are any additional questions from the panel.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court, Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. The issue in this case is very narrow, which is whether or not the conviction order from the Norfolk Circuit Court was properly authenticated in order to be admitted into evidence. And this court should affirm the trial court's decision because the order was properly authenticated both with the interplay between 8.01, 389, and 17.1, 258.3:2. The trial court properly recognized the interplay of these two statutes when it found that the 17.1 statute actually reads for providing official certificates, not just copies of records in digital forms, but actual official certificates.
Is there anything on this document where the circuit court clerk attests that it's a true copy of the original maintained in their office?
The document has the stamp, which contains the deputy clerk's signature, and then the reference to the 17.1 statute. There is no specific language that says this is a certified copy that's located in the 8.01, 389, I think it's
section E. Suppose we're not in the digital age, we're back in the old paper days, and somebody goes and the clerk hands them a copy of the order book. Mm-hmm. But there's no attestation on there. Is that going to be admissible?
Yes. I believe in my brief I cited the Hurley case from the Supreme Court of the United States, which is from the, off the top of my head, it's 18 something, but obviously way before the digital age. And in that case, it was just the signature and saying, I'm the clerk of this court. And the Supreme Court found that was sufficient. But what we have here is even more than that, because you have this reference to the 17.1 statute, and the 17.1 statute, the only purpose of that statute is to provide official certificates. So by this deputy clerk of the Circuit Court of Norfolk stamping this with his signature and referencing this statute, he's saying this is our method of providing official certificates to people. This is how we're complying with the 17.1 statute, and this is what this is. And so I think you need to take that whole as a context, both that the signature and the reference to that statute makes this a certified copy. And in 8.01389E, it does say examples of languages that courts can use to say that it's a certified record, but the last sentence of that section says that it shall not limit it to something else that couldn't be appropriate. And I think in this case, what that stamp says is appropriate to authenticate the conviction order to be what it purports to be. And what it purports to be is a conviction order from the Circuit Court of Norfolk convicting the defendant of a DUI second. And as I mentioned in my brief, the veracity of the document is also supported by that DMV transcript. And
Could you read us exactly what that says? I'm up for 300% magnification, and I still can't read it.
It says, "Deputy signed by Leroy, digitally signed by Leroy Chapman, Deputy Clerk, Virginia Code 17.1258.3:2. I agree to specified portions of this document, November 14th, 2012, at 12:36 p.m. I believe."
Thank you.
Of course, Your Honor.
Your eyes are better than mine.
I've stared at it a lot, too. But yes, for those reasons, and also my harmless error argument that I made in the brief, that we would ask that you affirm the conviction and uphold the trial court's ruling on the order. And unless there are further questions from the court? Thank you.
No.
Okay, thank you. All right, counsel, you have a little bit of time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Just briefly with regard to the Hurley versus Charles case, which counsel mentioned from the Supreme Court of Virginia from 1911, I think that can be a little bit distinguished from this case because even though in that case there was only the signature did indicate that the item had been signed on behalf of the clerk of the Circuit Court of Tazewell County. So certainly in this case, counsel just read for the court what the certification says on this this exhibit, and it indicates deputy clerk, but it doesn't indicate on behalf of or by authority of the clerk of the circuit court for the city of Norfolk. So that I'd ask the court to find that there is a slight distinction, but a significant distinction between that Hurley case and the case that we hear about today. In addition, since the time of the decision of that case, 801-389 has been enacted. So I'd ask the court to consider that that somewhat takes precedence over this decision from the Supreme Court back in 1911. And finally, with regard to the harmless error, the admission of this document into evidence really is far from harmless because it elevates the DUI charge from a second offense DUI absent this conviction to a third offense DUI, which makes the charge a felony rather than a misdemeanor, and it also increases the grade of the misdemeanor refusal charge from a class, it would be absent this conviction, it's merely a class 2 misdemeanor, but as it stands now, Mr. Williams was convicted of a class 1 misdemeanor and sentenced to the maximum punishment of 12 months in jail. So that concludes my argument. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.